Chapter 31. And mourned. Edward received them wrathfully, and ordered the heads of the whole six to be struck off. However, the good queen fell upon her knees, and besought the king to give them up to her. The king replied, "I wish you had been somewhere else, but I cannot refuse you." Apostrophe so she had them properly dressed, made a feast for them, and sent them back with a handsome present, to the great rejoicing of the whole camp. I hope the people of Calais loved the daughter to whom she gave birth soon afterwards, for her gentle mother's sake. Now came that terrible disease, the plague, into Europe, hurrying from the heart of China, and killed the wretched people, especially the poor, in such enormous numbers, that one half of the inhabitants of England are related to have died of it. It killed the cattle, in great numbers too, and so few working men remained alive, that there were not enough left to till the ground. After 8 years of differing and quarreling, the Prince of Wales again invaded France with an army of 60,000 men. He went through the south of the country, burning and plundering wheresoever he went, while his father, who had still the Scottish War upon his hands, did the like in Scotland, but was harassed and worried in his retreat from that country by the Scottish men, who repaid his cruelties with interest. The French king, Philip, was now dead, and was succeeded by his son John. The Black Prince, called by that name from the color of the armor he wore to set off his fair complexion, continuing to burn and destroy in France, roused John into determined opposition. And so cruel had the Black Prince been in his campaign, and so severely had the French peasants suffered, that he could not find one who, for love, or money, or the fear of death, would tell him what the French king was doing, or where he was. Thus it happened, that he came upon the French king's forces, all of a sudden, near the town of Poitiers, and found that the whole neighboring country was occupied by a vast French army. God help us! Apostrophe said the Black Prince, we must make the best of it. Apostrophe, so, on a Sunday morning, the 18th of September, the prince whose army was now reduced to 10,000 men in all prepared to give battle to the French king, who had 60,000 horse alone. While he was so engaged, there came riding from the French camp, a cardinal, who had persuaded John, to let him offer terms, and try to save the shedding of Christian blood. Save my honor, apostrophe said the prince to this good priest, and save the honor of my army, and I will make any reasonable terms. Apostrophe he offered to give up all the towns, castles, and prisoners he had taken, and to swear to make no war in France for 7 years. But, as John would hear of nothing but his surrender, with 100 of his chief knights, the treaty was broken off. And the prince said quietly, God defend the right, we shall fight tomorrow. Apostrophe, therefore, on the Monday morning, at break of day, the two armies prepared for battle. The English were posted in a strong place, which could only be approached by one narrow lane, skirted by hedges on both sides. The French attacked them by this lane, but were so galled and slain by English arrows from behind the hedges, that they were forced to retreat. Then went 600 English bowmen round about, and, coming upon the rear of the French army, rained arrows on them thick and fast. The French knights, thrown into confusion, quitted their banners and dispersed in all directions. Said Sir John Chandos to the prince, ride forward, noble prince, and the day is yours. The King of France is so valiant a gentleman, that I know he will never fly, and may be taken prisoner. Apostrophe said the prince to this, advance, English banners, in the name of God and Saint George. Apostrophe apostrophe and on they pressed until they came up with the French king, fighting fiercely with his battle axe, and, when all his nobles had forsaken him, attended faithfully to the last by his youngest son Philip, only 16 years of age. Father and son fought well, and the king had already two wounds in his face, and had been beaten down, when he at last delivered himself to a banished French knight, and gave him his right hand glove in token that he had done so. The Black Prince was generous as well as brave, and he invited his royal prisoner to supper in his tent, and waited upon him at table, and, when they afterwards rode into London in a gorgeous procession, mounted the French king on a fine cream-colored horse, and rode at his side on a little pony. This was all very kind, but I think it was, perhaps, a little theatrical too, and has been made more meritorious than it deserved to be, especially as I am inclined to think that the greatest kindness to the King of France would have been not to have shown him to the people at all. However, it must be said, for these acts of politeness, that, in course of time, they did much to soften the horrors of war and the passions of conquerors. It was a long, long time before the common soldiers began to have the benefit of such courtly deeds, but they did at last, and thus it is possible that a poor soldier who asked for quarter at the Battle of Waterloo, or any other such great fight, may have owed his life indirectly to Edward the Black Prince. At this time there stood in the Strand, in London, a palace called the Savoy, which was given up to the captive King of France and his son for their residence. As the King of Scotland had now been King Edward's captive for 11 years too, his success was, at this time, tolerably complete. The Scottish business was settled by the prisoner, being released under the title of Sir David, King of Scotland, and by his engaging to pay a large ransom. The state of France encouraged England to propose harder terms to that country, where the people rose against the unspeakable cruelty and barbarity of its nobles, where the nobles rose in turn against the people, where the most frightful outrages were committed on all sides, and where the insurrection of the peasants, called the insurrection of the Jacquerie, from Jacques, a common Christian name among the country people of France, awakened terrors and hatreds that have scarcely yet passed away. A treaty called the Great Peace was at last signed, under which King Edward agreed to give up the greater part of his conquests, and King John to pay, within 6 years, a ransom of 3,000,000 crowns of gold. He was so beset by his own nobles and courtiers for having yielded to these conditions, though they could help him to no better, that he came back of his own will to his old palace prison of the Savoy, and there died. There was a sovereign of Castile at that time, called Pedro the Cruel, who deserved the name remarkably well. Having committed, among other cruelties, a variety of murders, this amiable monarch, being driven from his throne for his crimes, went to the province of Bordeaux, where the Black Prince, now married to his cousin Joan, a pretty widow, was residing, and besought his help. The prince, who took to him much more kindly than a prince of such fame ought to have taken to such a ruffian, readily listened to his fair promises, and agreeing to help him, sent secret orders to some troublesome disbanded soldiers of his and his father's, who called themselves the Free Companions, and who had been a pest to the French people for some time, to aid this Pedro. The prince, himself, going into Spain to head the army of relief, soon set Pedro on his throne again, where he no sooner found himself than, of course, he behaved like the villain he was, broke his word without the least shame, and abandoned all the promises he had made to the Black Prince. Now, it had cost the prince a good deal of money to pay soldiers to support this murderous king, and finding himself, when he came back disgusted to Bordeaux, not only in bad health, but deeply in debt, he began to tax his French subjects to pay his creditors. They appealed to the French king, Charles. War again broke out, and the French town of Limoges, which the prince had greatly benefited, went over to the French king. Upon this he ravaged the province, of which it was the capital, burnt, and plundered, and killed in the old sickening way, and refused mercy to the prisoners, men, women, and children taken in the offending town, though he was so ill, and so much in need of pity himself from heaven, that he was carried in a litter. He lived to come home and make himself popular with the people and parliament, and he died on Trinity Sunday, the 8th of June, 1376, at 46 years old. The whole nation mourned for him as one of the most renowned and beloved princes it had ever had, and he was buried with great lamentations in Canterbury Cathedral. Near to the tomb of Edward the Confessor, his monument, with his figure, carved in stone, and represented in the old black armor, lying on its back, may be seen at this day, with an ancient coat of mail, a helmet, and a pair of gauntlets hanging from a beam above it, which most people like to believe were once worn by the Black Prince. King Edward did not outlive his renowned son long. He was old, and one Alice Pers, a beautiful lady, had contrived to make him so fond of her in his old age, that he could refuse her nothing, and made himself ridiculous. She little deserved his love, or what I dare say she valued a great deal more the jewels of the late queen, which he gave her among other rich presents. She took the very ring from his finger on the morning of the day when he died, and left him to be pillaged by his faithless servants. Only one good priest was true to him, and attended him to the last. Besides being famous for the great victories I have related, the reign of King Edward III was rendered memorable in better ways, by the growth of architecture and the erection of Windsor Castle. In better ways still, by the rising up of Wycliffe, originally a poor parish priest, who devoted himself to exposing, with wonderful power and success, the ambition and corruption of the Pope, and of the whole church of which he was the head. Some of those Flemings were induced to come to England in this reign too, and to settle in Norfolk, where they made better woolen cloths than the English had ever had before. The Order of the Garter, a very fine thing in its way, but hardly so important as good clothes for the nation, also dates from this period. The king is said to have picked up a lady's garter at a ball, and to have said, "Honi soit qui mal y pense," in English, "evil be to him who evil thinks of it." Apostrophe The courtiers were usually glad to imitate what the king said or did, and hence from a slight incident the Order of the Garter was instituted, and became a great dignity. So the story goes. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.